You guys feel the same way?
No, I think they were trying to make it more like we were students and just telling the information, and I would have rather just been told the information as not the little things that we had to do.
Right, and I think that as we expand the uses of technology in our school, we'll be prepared to come up with policy and things to address issues that come up. I don't think there's a real critical anything critical at our school right now. Anybody who was there think that. So we did. It's a whole computer program that where we went through and rated our school in a bunch of areas, and which was the first step. And we're supposed to get back together and review it at a later date and see what we're doing to improve where we rated ourselves. And we'll do that at a later date.
But it was being paid for right now. But next year, it will not be paid for. The schools have to pay for it. So it's kind of like, where do you get the money in?
Have to pay for what?
For the program.
Is that for new schools, or will we have to pay? I'm not sure.
I understood it that right now we're kind of in the window where we can use it and everything, but eventually they want you to pay for it.
What program is it, like NetScout or something?
I don't even remember what it's called exactly. It's not NetSmart. It's not the program that's curriculum for the students. It's a tool for the schools to use to make sure that they have policy and that in place for when things come up.
So it's not an actual firewall. It's just a policy.
Yeah, it's not.
Well, it's like a developer. Yeah, it's a template for developing policy.
Yeah.
So you're covered legally with.
It was paid for by a grant from Adobe for the Orem schools, and because we Orem's part, we got to go and I'm not sure that we actually need to pay for the program beyond this year. Now that we've seen it, we could just kind of do our own thing if they're going to make us pay for it in the future. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you feel about it, those who went, but I.
Kind of like look at it, get off what forms you want to use that you could make fit your school, and then go from there.
Well, I think a large part of that, those discussions, should come from this group as we start looking at policy and how we're looking at handbook, you know, regarding student access and, you know, what we want here at this school. Because O'Canyon's not the school 10 miles from here, it's O'Canyon, and a large part of that discussion comes from our parents. Groups that we have in the school community council. So I think that's where we start soliciting feedback and information for changes.
So did they discuss things like cell phone usage and
briefly in a way.
They talked about looking at the big picture as regards to internet safety, so not just what hardware and what firewalls you can have in place, but also having curriculum that you can teach kids, having different places where they can learn about digital citizenship. It was like a big picture of what's our vision of what we want technology to do for us in school, and what do we think might be some concerns, and how we're going to protect against those concerns.
There's also
content and
they stress the importance that we have policy in place that's the same across the board. For instance, if a teacher finds a phone with something pornographic on it, or what do they do? Do they erase it? Do they keep? I mean, what?
They confiscate it.
And for all of us, it was you give it to the principal, and that's.
And make him take care of it.
And Mr. Grover was there, and his was, hey, we've got a resource officer in our school. We'll just ask him. You know, he can. Anyway, so.
Well, they had long checklists that you were supposed to go through, and I thought, as a teacher, they need to have, like, the four most important things to hurry and, okay, did I do this, 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 and this, but then go to the rest later. It's like you just don't have time to go down a whole page, you know, have I done this, have I done this? So I think you'd have to make that work for the school, you know.
Enough said about that.
So the next item is our school action plan. And that's yours, right?
Yeah, I was actually asked to address this one.
All right.
And I didn't bring my binder in, but I think there's a stakeholder report in the binders, maybe.
I have the old one. I don't have a new one.
Yeah, it's the old one.
Okay.
It's okay. You don't need it. I'll refer to it slightly.
There's
but
new ones on that,
No, they're still current. Basically, we were accredited in 2010, and we had to come up with an action plan to address some of the goals for the school, and based on our DRSLs, and I mean, use all these fancy terms. But, I just am going to review the four action plan items that we came up with, and they go along with the goals that are on the stakeholder report. Mr. Sumner's actually going to then talk about our school improvement plan, which is the official document that we submit to talk about some of the things we're going to do. One of the things on the list was, of course, the first goal on the stakeholder report was to decrease the overall percentage of students with failing grade, and we've done that with we've done a good job with that with our e-time. We've taken things a step further this year, for those of you who aren't aware, to where we're directing e-time for many of the students. We pull them aside and we say, you're going here. You don't get to choose. I mean, they might be failing several things, but we're helping direct them. We also have a lunch and learn program where we can refer a student who is failing a class, get the work from the teacher that will bring them up to passing. They get to spend their lunch in lunch and learn until they get that done. Then they can go back to having a free lunch period. They get their lunch, but they get to eat it and learn and do their work. And I did this with a student. He was passing within a couple of days. He's still dipping back and forth and back and forth in the lunch and learn, but it was just very successful for him. Anything you want to say about that? You look like
you. Yeah. It's amazing when, you know, it's one thing to direct students to a class and say, we're still kind of giving you an option. We want you to sit there and do the work, and then e-time's over. It's like, see you later. And they go to lunch. This one is, we always build it as, we're not doing this to be punitive. We're not trying to be mean. We care so much about your learning that we're going to help you, because right now you are not. We're going to help, you know, intervene there a little bit. Especially when you have a student that might have a failing grade. We want, part of our goal is teaching responsibility. And if we're letting them get out of work, then you can't take an irresponsible student, allow them to be irresponsible and miss work, and expect failing grade or whatever to magically teach them responsibility. And so if you take an irresponsible student, make them be accountable, have them do the work, then they earn the grade that they're working on, and it's not waiting till the very, very end of the term either. So some of the discussions we've done the last 2 weeks are, we started this lunch and learn, and the first day we had 35 kids referred. And I don't know who else was in there, but the work that was done, calling them, there was an
absolutely
urgency.
Quiet.
It was an urgency to get it done because it involved lunch. And we want to feed them, but we also want them to do the work. So when students found out, well, you got to stay here for lunch. Yeah, unless your work's done. And we had to check it off, so it was not just like insert serial names for your answers. The work that was done, giving it back to teachers, they really liked it. So we haven't finalized anything. We want to talk to our e-time committee and see what type of plans we can do. Instead of waiting until the end of the term, see if there's something we can do, the same type of thing, at the beginning of the term all the way through. So a student or a teacher, it's hard to ask a teacher to go back 6 weeks and say, remember 6 weeks ago you did that assignment, reprint it, redo it. We want to see if we can start doing that systematically from day one of the term, not wait till the end of the term. So we're very in experimental mode, kind of ready, fire, aim, a lot of times with the interventions for students to see what actually works. And some things work for some kids and some don't work for the others, so you're constantly moving target. But it's fun.
Well, and it's great to add a new dimension too, because actual just e-time, the whole concept of e-time dropped our Fs dramatically, and then we sort of plateaued. And this is taking it another step further and really working on even improving from the huge improvement that we made. One of the other parts of the action plan, and I actually have the documents right out of our accreditation manual, which you don't have to look at, included teacher collaboration in this one. And we continue to improve our teacher collaboration as well. One of the areas that came up this year was science, and we have a science teacher here with us. But we Mr. Sumner, I should say, the board's in my room, but I have nothing to do with it. The decision was made to spread the Science 7 amongst all of the teachers so that they could all collaborate on at least one subject, because there were teachers who were just doing all ninth grade biology and so forth. And our science department chair says that the department has never collaborated better than this year. It's just really been a great thing for the department. Anything you want to add to that? Do you agree? Okay. No, we did the same thing with pre-algebra as well. Pre-algebra is spread. There are teachers teaching pre-algebra this year who hadn't taught it in years and years, and it's just, you know, so they can all collaborate in a subject. And so we continue to look at the collaboration process and making that more than just a time when you get together and have a meeting and don't accomplish what it was originally intended to do, but I think it continues to improve.
Yeah. We're to the point where next year, I mean, we are making common assessments, but to the point where you could actually look at the assessments and see who scored better in what class, we're not really there yet. This year, we're really focusing on getting common curriculum for everybody, so we're all teaching basically the same thing. And our next step will be to, okay, we've got these tests, now how is everybody doing, what can we tweak here and there? But we're kind of just at phase one at this point, but it's going really well.
The next goal was, thank you, moving on. I have to actually be gone at 3:30, so I'm really going, trying to go faster. The next one is to implement the DRSL of lifelong learner, and I think we do that really well at our school, and I don't know that there's a student in the school who wouldn't be able to recite that thing right there, the mission statement. And it's stress in our classes. You know, there are lots of different things throughout the school where we stress to the students that us as faculty and staff members read books, and so we have signs up that say that we're reading a book. One of the things along this line, and it was a goal that I think came out of this meeting, was we added a, well, it actually was part of the action plan also that I looked through, but we added a day of service. Actually, it was a week of service. So students in the school got a real good taste of service, and there's so much learning that comes from that. And the things that the school did, and it was led by our student council, and they did a great job. And even the student council themselves, Chelsea Olenek does a great job with the student council, but we have some really motivated students who really took charge of some of that and just went and did some great things.
And funded by PTA with PTA money, getting the school to help fund these opportunities for the students. And how many parents were there that day? That week, lots of people participating, lots of adults in the building, you know, parents in the building, supporting that day and helping out through PTA.
Anything you want to add on this particular one, the lifelong learning one?
other than we also go around every term to the classrooms to talk about different policies, counselors, administrators. Some of the things we've emphasized at the beginning were we gave a quick quiz to everybody with specifics for lifelong learner, where they are on the continuum of lifelong learner, developing learner, or basic learner. And seeing the results there, at the end of the year, we want to give them the same test to see if they've shown improvement. We also talk about key concepts of how to interact appropriately with people. We talk about bullying. We talk about school policies. Anything that comes up as an issue, we want to address, you know, face-to-face with students. As we go into classrooms and talk to them, I actually love that time. Each of us take about 7-8 classrooms during that second period instead of having e-time that day and just go over different things that are coming up as a school as a concern. I can tell you that the thing that might probably will come up next week is our student council really wants us, maybe for another part, they really want us to open up the outside so they can eat outside again. And I said, you bet, as long as we can clean the inside first and have the trash thrown away. They're going to put a major push into organizing themselves to be good citizens here within the building to clean up after themselves so they can open up the outside. The only reason we've shut down the outside in the past is we never have enough time to clean up the outside before parents arrive. And it really looked bad when parents pulled up, like, where is all this garbage coming from? Because our lunch is right there in front of the building. So I'm excited to see, and those are things we'll talk about next week with student council coming in. They want to actually come with us to the classroom to hear what we say and add that as a student council initiative, too. So.
All right. If anybody has questions about any of these things, just jump in. But otherwise, I'm just going to plow ahead. Next one on here, Oak Canyon will continue to investigate methods to improve the quality and timely communications to parents and students. I think do a good job with this, and we're continuing to learn more about what Skyward can do. We just found out something that Skyward can do in the last few days that we're going to start using, where it will actually communicate with the caller automatically and call any student who has an F, and we can set that up to do that daily or once a week or whatever, and we're going to be going to one of the other schools who figured out how to do it to learn. Did you already do that, or you already went?
We went, yeah.
Okay.
Yesterday.
So that'll be good for some.
We'll try to use a calming voice, so if you get that call, it's not a panic.
The school that we went to look at what they were doing, their report back, like, it was a science teacher that we talked with, and he said he went to zero F's in his class, in 7th grade and 9th, zero F's in his class. He said that was phenomenal, that he knew it would have an effect, but he didn't know how strong of an effect it would have. But of course, he's doing work in his class to keep him on track too, but...
I think that this might also have an effect on the few teachers that we still have within the building who aren't as good at keeping things updated in Skyward, their grades and things. They'll know, I've got to get those things in there. I'm going to get a whole lot of calls from parents or whatever. I just think this is going to be a great, great tool. We, as a... our SST committee or our... at what we used to call our at-risk committee, where the counselors and the administration work together. We've been sending home emails to the parents of students with F's once a week, and with a letter saying, you know, we're trying to help your student, and your student is failing one more classes. And we've had some great response from that. Parents who've thanked us for it and said, thank you for making me aware, we'll get right on it. Parents who've been down here an hour later after they got the email to get to the bottom of it, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's been a good thing. But this will even take it a step further. We'll continue to do that within our group as well, although I'm not sure we'll need to do the same thing. We may tweak what we're doing there. So the email's great, the caller's good. One of the things that we do to communicate with other schools are the meetings that we have with our feeder schools. We go and meet with every sixth grade teacher that feeds our school at all of the different elementaries to find out the needs of our students incoming so we can help place them in classes. We meet with the high school and help facilitate our students moving on as well. One thing that's coming up that you'll be receiving, there's a, which we just barely made up labels for all of our ninth graders who are going to Timpanogos High, there's a night where they're going to be having a bunch of breakout sessions and speakers coming from colleges and things, and they're inviting all of our students to it. So you know, we try and keep in communications with our schools that we feed as well as with our feeder schools. I actually had to add up last week. I got a call from Pleasant Grove High School. They wanted to know how many students were going to be moving on to which math class because they wanted to make sure they had enough sections in each of those areas, which I think is great for the high school to do, to be thinking about our students. And so just good ways that we communicate. Of course, the stakeholder report continues to be improved. I think we're going to talk about maybe this group or trust lands funding this possibly and doing some more of this. But this goes out to all of our patrons. And anything else about communications you want to cover, Mr. Sunder?
I just think the one thing, I say this real quick, the one thing that I try to emphasize as much as possible, when we look at school goals as a school, the four we have listed on the stakeholder report, they are the same for the upcoming stakeholder report that's currently at the printer right now. These are in direct alignment with our accreditation results. So when our accreditation status is based on us recommending, seeing where we're strong at, seeing where we're weak at. We identified as a school the four areas we were weakest at. We wanted to improve in these areas. Our school goals are tied to those areas. And so when we start looking at school goals, accreditation, our trust lands, and our school improvement plan, all of those should really start aligning into how they correlate. They should all be tied together. It shouldn't be pulling some over here and over here. They should all be like, look, we've got a laser-like focus to try to help students in these following areas because we've identified the students that need help in these specific areas. So as you see these, know that it's not just a few of us sitting down making goals. It's directly related to our accreditation model. So when they come back, we got a 6-year with a 3-year interim visit, which is the top score you can get. They'll come back in another year and a half to 2 years and say, all right, you said you're going to do these four things. Their recommendation to us was the four things we already recommended to them. So they didn't give us any other suggestions of what we already had, which is always a concern. But they're going to come back and say, where is your progress on those? And depending on that communication from us to them showing here's our progress, they can continue on with another 3-year visit, or they can say, we'll be back next year until you say you do what you said you're going to do. So it benefits us to start following our goals and completing them. So.
And I personally, I've been through a couple of accreditations now, and the first time it felt like the year before the accreditation is when we worried about it and we hurried and did some of these things. This time it feels more like we went through the accreditation, now we're going to follow up on these things through the whole 6 years, not just wait until we're being accredited again, which I appreciate. It's the way it should be. So the last one on here is we continue to refine and monitor the four essential questions to assist student learning, and there, as far as an action plan here, we do have some things that we're putting in place specifically for our ELL and our special ed students, who are the two groups that still are not improving at quite the same rate as the rest of the student population. It's a small portion, but it's an area that we've needed to emphasize. We've we've done some things. We've added some well, changed some of the ways we do our special ed with mainstreaming the students and having support classes to go with those. I'm not sure exactly how to report on any of these. Maybe you do in a brief way, but
I think a lot of it will come up this whole group.
Okay, good. That's what I was hoping you'd say. Everybody know the four essential questions?
How will we know they know? How will we set them?
Yeah. What are we doing if
they,
yeah.
We just say no, already know it. What do we do if they don't know it?
Yeah.
And
what's the last one?
What are we doing if they already do know it?
And I think we addressed them all quite well, and I think one that gets left out in a lot of cases is the one, what do we do for those who know it? I think we stress trying to equalize and do things for both ends of the spectrum and everybody in between. So that's all I have.
Perfect. Thank you. Next is our school improvement plan. Scott, you're taking care of that.
Yeah. So exciting. I just want to say thank you for you being here. I mean, we realize there's a lot going on, and it's end of the term, and I was trying to catch up, and, you know, grading-wise, you know, and student-wise, I mean, I've got my own seventh grader that we found out she's missing some math stuff that we wanted to, you know, work on this evening too. So, I mean, there's different things happening. We just want to say thank you for your work to work with the school and give us your input so we can always make sure we're improving here. In your binder, there's four specific areas that they talk about with school community council responsibilities. One is the school improvement plan, where we want input to say, this is what we're doing, what other input do you have as parents that you see? I don't ever want you to feel like, hey, we're presenting this stuff like this is what we're doing. We're presenting this stuff to say, this is what we have, and we're open to suggestions of other options as well. But school improvement plan, which I'm going to talk about, professional development plans, which we'll talk about on the end of the agenda today, child access routing plan, which is something we've talked about in the past, with especially with the canal going down and all that kind of stuff, and then our school land trust plan. Those are the four main areas that we work on. So jumping back to school improvement plan, I don't have copies for everybody because we're just kind of in the beginning stages of it, but we talked briefly about it last time, but like I said just a few minutes ago, our goals for the school, our school improvement plan, our trust lands, our professional development plans, all of it should really align. I mean, we shouldn't just, I remember starting as a teacher when we had professional development days, and it was, we do this over here, and then we do this over here, and some of it was great, and some of it was really helpful, but others of it was just like, what can we do to buy the time, what we can do to spread things out, and some of it was much more valuable than others, as, you know, you talk to teachers, some of it we need to bring back into it as well, that was very valuable for teachers. But with our school improvement plan, there's three main areas. This is a report that I have to have filled out, but I want to have input from school community council to make sure this is the plan that you see as well as what we're needing to approve on. It's submitted to the state, or excuse me, the district, and then to the state saying, this is what O'Kane is identifying as their areas to improve, the school improvement plan, or SIP, as, if you want the acronym for it. If you want to add another acronym to your vocabulary. But the school improvement plan should also be tied to your accreditation. Should tie to your school goals. So our first, we have three specific goals that we've had in the past that we'd like to recommend that we have again. Is our first goal is to decrease the average number of failing students by 5% in each grade level at the end of each term when compared to the previous year's data, while maintaining class rigor. We don't want teachers to just say, hey, we're simplifying things and dropping our percentages to 40% instead of 60% or whatever. Rigor stays high, more work's completed, more students learn, and that is, you know, more high school credit earned. But the rigor has to stay the same. But that's one of our goals, is continue to drop the failing rate and improve student learning. The second goal is, based on our accreditation results, we always want to improve our reading and writing for students. And so our second goal is to improve the reading and writing of students that have been identified as struggling in basic areas of language arts and their Lexile reading scores. So when we assess students with their Lexile reading scores and we get their CRTs with ones or twos, as CRTs are based on a score of 1, 2, 3, or 4. If they get a 1 or a 2, they're not considered proficient. They're not mastering the content they should have had. 3s and 4s, they at least have a mastery level of the content presented. So So if they don't have a one or if they don't have a three or four, they're on every list we've got to try to help them improve to get to a proficient level. Our third goal is to improve the overall math scores of students we've identified as struggling based on their CRT as well. So some of the ways we've accomplished that, and we want to continue to set as goals in our school improvement plan, is in five areas. Action step number one for our school improvement plan is we want to continue to refine e-time. We want to continue to monitor. We talked about a learning lunch of a specific directed e-time, so we're continually monitoring that. We have an e-time committee that...
You're
both on the e-time committee. You got two meetings in a row with me. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that. But we're continuing to monitor and adjust. And I think if you would, you guys have both been on it from the beginning as well, haven't you?
Oh, no, I wasn't on it from
the beginning. We've changed quite a bit over the past
four
years as to how we've offered e-time. And we're continuing to monitor and adjust that. And that's one of our goals is, boy, we don't want to ever become content. I mean, if we're right now about 8% of students in the family grade, love to get that to 5, then to 3, then to 2, while maintaining rigor and while maintaining all the things that are essential in school. So continue to monitor and refine e-time. Also, in action step one is the Principal's Academy. Again, nothing solidified. We're going to talk about this in our e-time committee tomorrow, but to have something systematic all term long where teachers can refer a student that they are missing essential learning in the class, a project, a test, an assignment. Maybe they didn't pass the test and the teacher wants to repeat. Whatever that is, we want to have that as an option for teachers to have them, not just wait till the end of the term, the last day, and say, one last final ditch effort, you know, throw this word search together, you know, or complete this word search at the end of the term, just squeak by with 1% more. We want to have those essential learning all the way through. Teachers work really hard to design lessons and projects and assessments to measure if students have learned it or not. There's really no true way to say if they've learned or not unless they've completed not only the projects and the activities and worksheets, but the assessments as well. So this kind of gauge to get those kids from the beginning rather than wait for them at the end. Many kids make these up, but many kids don't. That's why there's 8% that still have a failing grade. And then our student support team is part of that action step number one. Each Monday, counselors and administrators want to talk about individual students, where they're at, how to help them, send emails home, communicate with parents, meet with parents, anything we can do to provide that additional support and help. That's one of our action steps to get to the three goals. Action step number two is we want to offer a Read 180 class to those students that struggle. And this is where I said to Mike, it starts aligning this way to help those struggling readers. If they have a 1 or 2 on a CRT, they do not get a choice. They go to Read 180. There's no option. So when we get those student reports at the beginning of the end of the year from sixth grade teachers, they'll tell us where they're at on their reading levels. If they identify them as a struggling learner, we want to make it so systematic that when a student comes to register, they have a couple classes already registered. Like, hey, why am I in Read 180? Well, because you're not proficient in reading yet. So we want to make that automatic. It's not even a discussion. There's nothing there that they can choose from except for that class during that period. So it gets pre-assigned. So that's our Read 180 class, and that's where our trust lens comes in, too. We want to offer that class again, paid for by one of the sections paid for by trust lens. The third step is offer a guided studies class, to have a smaller group setting where teachers can work on a smaller ratio of students to initiate, to work on goals, work on projects, have time during the day, but it's really a one. We want to have around 20 students in the class, but a 1-on-20 situation where teachers can really sit down daily every other day for the AAB day and sit down and talk about goals of students, where they're at, where the learning is. But we also want to add, part of action step number three is a guided math class. The guided studies would be something we're going to talk about as hopefully funding again from trust lands, a couple of sections, but our guided math has not been funded from trust lands. It's something we put into the schedule where any student with, just like the Read 180, if they come into our school with a 1 or 2 on a CRT, it's an automatic section that they jump into. What that math does is it's a preloaded class, students that struggle, they get taught the concepts beforehand, they review the concepts they've already been taught, they can work with a teacher one-on-one, it's a little bit smaller of a class, just to give them the help needed so that they have a daily math instead of the every other day math in a block schedule. Again, systematic in that they come in. We also reserve a few seats in the Read 180, the guided studies, and the guided math, so 7th or 8th grader that wasn't identified, maybe have slipped through the cracks a little bit,
we'll pull them in, and you know, through our SST team on Mondays, we'll start placing those kids if they slip through the cracks and haven't been placed properly. That was step number three, and then step number four is math lab, also funded by Trust Labs this past year and years before. It's after-school tutoring from our certified math teachers. They rotated amongst the departments 3 days a week for an hour after school. What a great opportunity for students who are struggling in math. They can come in and get the extra help needed from their teachers. And they're here paid for after school so they can work with these students. But that's been a huge benefit. But also, again, once again, to accomplish those goals of helping students who are struggling in math. And then finally, our action step number five is attendance accountability. We have really, really put a systematic approach into our attendance policy. It doesn't matter how many interventions we put into the school day. If we don't have students here, they're not going to learn it. And so both excused and unexcused, we have had some great success with students that we could not get here in years past. They're here now when we start actions of here's a warning letter, here's a warning letter, here's a truancy citation, there's a truancy citation too, and then it goes to court. Truancy school, then court. I mean, it is so specific, but we want to make sure we use that only when we need to, but use it when we need to help students get in class. Because I can't expect any teachers to be able to grade, prepare, present, have everything ready, and also chase a student at home and pull them back to class. I mean, that I think I'm taking that one on myself, that we're going out, you know, going to homes to talk to kids, bring them to school, but in some cases we're also using our school resource officer to help us with that too, because it is a class we missed, meaning not being in school. Sounds scary, and that's why we get lots of kids from there.
Yeah. The TARDI policy system is included in that as well, right?
Yeah.
It's been very, very effective as well.
Yeah, in fact, our data from TARDIs, one of my first or second years here, we started with term one, 4,500 TARDIs in a term. Yeah, and we had a few more kids, 1,400 kids or so, 1,500 kids, no, 1,450 or so. And we started this new TARDI program. We're so excited about it. And it dropped down to 3,000. We just dropped TARDIs by 1,500, and we were so excited. You guys all remember the celebration. We targeted a few more, it dropped to 1,500, and we were so excited. High fives around, and you know, we were so excited. But then we started this new attendance accountability with the excused and unexcused absences and TARDIs. First term last year, we had 435 TARDIs, and it dropped to 409 this term. And so my favorite comment to students is, last year when we started this and we continue to see success with it, one of the students came up and said, Mr. Sumner, aren't you going to make us go to class? Aren't you worried we're going to be TARDI? No. I said, you can be TARDI if you want, but you're on step one. Dang. And they just went to class. I mean, it wasn't even a chase, you know, it wasn't even a challenge. It was, you know, students know that's the expectation. And the great thing about kids is they rise to expectations. They have high expectations, they reach. And so those are the action steps with our school improvement plan. And again, you'll see similar things with Region 80, guided studies, math lab, tied with our trust funds money, and they really should correlate with the school goals. But it is something we'll need to vote on, to accept, to present, but that's the presentation of it.
I have a question.
Sure.
That all sounded great. My one question is, does the student improvement plan only target kids that don't know, or is it supposed to target all of those four questions? Because everything on there was all targeted toward the first question.
Real answer for that is I only have 5 slots for action steps. There's no more spaces for it. If I had steps in it, it would also include, like in our trust lines plan, I would have put our AP geography in there too.
Mm-hmm.
I could combine some of those things and say, yes, we could, but the school improvement plan, as it was discussed, I mean, yes, to improve in all areas would also mean question number four. It's just simply that I don't have 6 spots to include the AP geography as we spend money.
And this improvement plan is an actual document that we submit to the district, and it doesn't include all of our accreditation goals by any means, which those other things are included
mm-hmm.
in the rest of our accreditation goals. That one does seem to target more
the
lower end,
yeah.
But certainly does not include all of our goals. So. Pardon?
You're asking if young masters.
Do we still have that?
Yeah, it's starting on Tuesday.
So what are all of the things that we do offer for kids that do get besides APGR? And I know we have GT, Utah History, and
English.
And TSA?
Yeah. The honors classes in the ninth grade.
TSA through Oscar.
Right. And the explore test that we offer for ninth graders.
Young masters in art, science demo, student council would be considered there.
4-H
would be there.
Audition choirs there.
All the audition choirs, advanced bands, symphonic band, advanced orchestra.
A lot of the junior highs are coming on board these days with the way we've operated our foreign language department for years, but there are still some junior highs where a seventh grader can't take a regular Spanish 1, French 1. They can take a combined introductory class that covers the three languages very briefly, but they're not allowed to actually start in a foreign language yet. That's what my wife teaches at one of those schools. But so our foreign language department is the biggest in the district as far as, and I think that's definitely one of those areas that.
And I think, Margie, to answer your question, I know that's always been a big focus on as our school community council here at the school. I don't know how their school community councils operate, but here.
The elementary school, all of the school improvement plans I was in on were targeting more about PAPRIS.
Mm-hmm. And I think besides the school improvement plan, there's other ways we can measure and progress, especially with our trust fund money, where I'd say it's a bridge, I mean, where we're covering all of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
There's other areas we can talk about, like even our accreditation plan, we've listed as search out ways for gifted and talented.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes in with as we put the four essential questions as one of our goals. It's continuing to monitor and adjust to make sure we're addressing each of those questions. And that's why, as we put that in there in our plan, is we want to make sure we're seeing all those. What comes to light for school is questions 1, 2, and 3 heavily, but we don't ever want to forget this question number 4 to give opportunities for students that are ready for more opportunities. Like, I mean, if you're taking Algebra 2 and Symphonic Band and Spanish 4 and AP Geography,
you're
quite a kid. You're quite a kid. And
there was nothing like that when I was in junior high. I mean, remember back when we were in school.
Yeah. And so this is why we want to make sure we're continuing to have those discussions to see, even though it might not be measured on this particular plan, because I think this, to me, kind of targets the more students that are struggling to say, here's where our focus is going with our school improvement plan. We also can list it in other areas, but it's still aligned in the same fashion as our accreditation, our goals, and our track length dollars.
My only, one of the reasons that I mention it is there has been a move lately, I don't know, I'm sure you probably noticed it, to make junior highs to 7th and 8th and move 9th grade back into high school so that they can have access to more academically challenging classes. So there's a couple of districts in Salt Lake that have made that move this year. And so I think if we don't want to be looking at pressure to do that, I think we have to make sure that we do. And we do have a lot of great things, but I do think that we need to protect that so that if that question comes up in our community, we can say, well, I don't know about your junior high, but ours does offer academic.
Our school has school to school as well, where they can go to the high school for the class.
Yeah, that's been going on for a while.
Yeah.
I know, but it's
just hard.
To take your kid over to the high school.
But if your child is in elementary school and gifted and talented, you are in charge of getting them there and back.
Yeah.
There are no buses. You agree when you go on the program, you get your child.
No,
there.
I'm not saying that.
I'm just saying it's hard getting them there on time, so they're not.
No, I totally agree. But I'm just
saying. You're talking about protecting the integrity of what we're doing here. Continue to offer those challenging and unique programs that are a draw to students, that make them want to be here if they are taking those advanced classes and have them an option for the students here.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised to see that move, and I think at least 2 school districts have
been. That would be such a huge undertaking in our district because we are so enormous.
I know.
They would have to build more high schools and investigate I see what you're saying, but I think that our students can get a very, very academic, a very rigorous academic schedule.
No, I agree. I just think it's important.
Yeah.
And I know maybe the school improvement plan is not the place to do it, but I'm just saying it's really important, I think, that we maintain that, because there have been sometimes shifts like that,
And though it isn't on that improvement plan, one thing that our community council has tried to do is make sure that we spread the trust fund money usage all the way across the board, not just focus on that lower end of the spectrum as well, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit.
Well, I was just going to say that. When you look at the money that Colin's going to talk about, how we spend it and how we're proposing to spend it next year, there's a few changes from this year to next year, but would we have a Read 180 class without trust land? Yes, because we need it. Would we have guided studies? Absolutely. Would we have math out of school? We'd have to find a way, because we're having such a benefit from it. Would we have AP geography? Yes, because we have those needs of this kid. But to me, it shows a commitment level and a support to the school and to the community at large, saying, as a parent group that was elected in this position, it's saying, this is what we value here of our school. We want to help the students that need it, that are struggling with Read 180, with guided studies, but we also want to help the students that need it and so are paying for AP geography as well. To me, it sends a very clear message of, this is what we value as a community that we want to continue to have at our school. And we also address, get the kids in the middle too, with our Read 180 program, and we're proposing a little bit more today that Colleen's going to jump into, that also addresses, those middle area kids too that aren't on this end or this end. It covers the whole spectrum. So I think that's the message we want to keep sending. Like you said, Mike, good point.
I definitely hope that we don't get pushed that direction too.
No, I just had noticed that, and I thought, sometimes those things move in waves too. And I thought, we're lucky because we do have great things. Orange Junior High doesn't offer a lot of things. So, as those parents might decide that they want to push for that, we could get sucked into those. That's all I'm saying, is I do think that needs to. The school district is a lot of districts.
Any other questions? All right, then we'll turn time over to Colleen. I think you have the
I do.
Plans.
I'm handing out now just a review of what was done. In this last year, what we're doing actually this year, and the results from last year's, and then what we might want to do for next year. If you'll turn the page, the first page that you go to, the My Access report, you'll see this is the writing program, so My Access, and you'll see the improvements between class 1, class 2, and there's 6 classes. And you can see the improvement they've made from 1 year to the next.
On a scale of 0 to 6. First
0 to 6. Yeah. So
is this just the kids involved in that or everybody? I mean, does that involve everybody in the school, all the students?
It has all the English classes
involved.
Six
teachers, class average.
Yeah, 6 teachers, classes average. So they had subscriptions were 1163. They were used 100%, and we had total logins of 733,490 logins. And then the students progressed, as you can see there. So that's what My Access is doing. The next page is Explore Test. We talked about seeing if Trustland would want to help give the Explore Test to all students that wanted to take it, and we've heard that the district is thinking very strongly of taking care of that for us. So if they take care of that for us, we would have no need for an assistance in there.
This is brand new, and they're talking about mandating that, not doing it as an option, but giving it to all.
So all students would take it.
Well, the district would just pay for it.
Uh-huh. And then the district would pay for it. So
I'm sure they'll get a lot better price
if they do the whole district.
Because we actually we charge $9 because that's what it costs to score 50 tests. If we scored 100, there's a price break. It goes down. The more that you score, the lower the price is. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure if they get the price for the whole district, it's going to be much more economic.
Tell us the benefit of taking this forecast, what it does for a student when they get the results.
Well, the nice thing about the Explore test is number one, it's normed for ninth graders. We used to give the plan test, which was normed for 10th graders, meaning they were being judged and compared to 10th graders across the country who took the test. When they do the test, they get a numeric score just like the ACT test, so 18 or a 25 or a 30, whatever. But they also get a percentile ranking so they can see, oh, I'm in the top 10% of everybody who took the test. I'm in whatever percentile. But the one of the beauties of the Explorer as well is I keep the test booklets and hand them back with the results to the students, and the results page shows them what question they missed and what the right answer is, so they can go back into their test booklet and see why they missed it. They can see what they put and then what the right answer was. I think this is very age appropriate. I think, you know, there's been some talk about doing a ACT prep class, but you really should take that class pretty close to the time that you're going to take the ACT test. And this is the right step for our students. I think the ACT prep is way premature, but it's a great opportunity. We've just opened it up for those who wanted to take it. David Smith, our district testing guy, is the one who told me about them. It's like 99% right now that they're going to be able to pay for it, and that's going to go through. He said we would not include necessarily some of our UALPA groups and some of those. I mean, there would be not as much benefit.
Those are severely disabled students.
Struggling student to take it. So it's not going to be mandated for 100% of our students to take, like we're supposed to on our CRTs and things like that. But it's a good, you know, setting up. Mm.
All right. It was fun to put these reports together to see the growth that the school makes in a short period of time. The next page is the CRT reports with the DWA and the AP Geography. In 2010-2011, our language arts score, composite score, was 91% proficiency, and this last year it was 93. The math CRT was 90 in 2010-2011, and this last year when they took the test, it was 91. The DWA was 94, and it dropped 1 point to 93. And AP Geography in 2010, it was 83, and in 2011, it was 92% passing rate on that one. So 92% of our students passed the AP Geography test.
Which is passing a 3 and above?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that was a good report. And each one of the things that we do with Trustland feed these programs so that the students have help with those programs. The next one is our Guided Studies report, and I think this was my most exciting report because just to see students who are struggling to be able to get the help that they need, and they are a select group of students who really, really need one extra level. So we had 32 total students in the two guided studies classes that we had. Each student had 8 total classes in their curriculum. So this report gives a percentage of failing grades for all those students. And it ended up 4.6%. Only 12 classes were failed in first term for all the students, for the 32 students.
And what's exciting about that? And I'm sorry to keep jumping
no,
in.
No, you're good.
When we look at this, these students are directed to this class as because there's a reason. These are kids that we really are working with. And there's lots of reasons. There's a number of kids in there that have good grades, but there's specific circumstances that get them into this class. But a lot of these kids really need the extra help and support from a teacher. And to see the results like this is one of the questions that came up in this group is, how are we measuring data with guided studies? You know, kind of looked around like,
yeah, how are we doing?
But that was taken away from us. And so looking at failing rate as compared to our goal of reducing failing number of failing students, it seemed logical. Then the results we found were really quite pleased with for the first time.
And it takes these 32 students who know exactly what they need to do and exactly where their weak points are, and the teacher helps them see how to circumvent the problems they're having. It's really been good. It's really been nice. The math lab report, first term, it was open for 10 days. We opened kind of late. It was open for 10 days, and 16 students used it. But this term, and this was up to Christmas break, there were 47 students who had used the lab during second term. So, and some of the lab student tutors in there will receive 0.5 elective credit if they attend 85% of the time and help students in there. And that's a good thing for our students to have as well, to be able to go in there and be proficient in math and help teach other kids who need to be proficient in math. So we feel like Math Lab has been useful and helpful. And it's not, we don't put a lot of money into that, so it's a good thing. On the next page is Read 180, and this is the average growth for last year. He was just getting his reports in for first semester or first term. Anyway, we had 86 students registered in the Read 180 class. We had 10,325 total growth levels in Lexiles, an average of 120 growth in Lexiles per student. The range was between, one student had 722 Lexiles that he grew, and another student had decreased by 284. And there's a lot of reasons for decreases in Lexiles. Sometimes they just shut down and don't do another thing, or sometimes they get sick and they're not at school, or there's crisis in the home. There's a lot of reasons why they lose growth in Lexiles. However, it shows us how important it is to have that class for students who need this added support where their reading is not strong enough quite yet, because they can lose it pretty quickly. But on an average, students are expected to grow approximately 75 to 100 Lexiles per year. So, and we averaged 120, which was good. So the last page is, and we funded each one of those areas last year in the trust line that we did for last year. But this is the one that over time we talked about it a little bit in our school community council, but we're talking about, well, our allocation for next year is 44,590, and we have a carryover of 36,76, which gives us a total allocation of 48,266. The AP Geography one section would be 8,435. Math Lab after school, $1,000. Guided Studies for two sections is 9,678. Read 180 is 6,788 for a total of 25,901. But we pay the benefits on this, which is 24%. So our benefits for that package would be $6,217. We're talking about asking to be able to help print and do our stakeholders report, so we're looking at about $2,000 there. And then we wanted a little help with the projector bulbs on our projectors in each of the classrooms. They're pretty expensive, and so when they go out, we'd like to have kind of a budget for that, and we put $1,063 there.
I think those should be switched to $2,000.
Oh, is that what? Yeah. Oh, okay, I got that wrong. Sorry, folks.
With the stakeholders
two holes right there.
Yeah, they are $350 per.
Yeah.
And
okay.
We have probably.
Per bulb.
What's that?
$350 per bulb.
Yeah,
for that
projector bulb.
They last a long time, but when they go there.
We have.
Wow.
40 of these projectors in the building, and we average about. Five a year.
But mine has lasted since Eamon put it in, so
yeah.
I mean,
it's been a long time, huh?
So it helps.
Well, since 2007.
They average about 3,000 hours.
And I use it every day. Mm-hmm. My little remote won't work for me anymore.
That's awesome.
But like some loud projector.
No, I
said
yeah.
That.
And then
the mute button that I love where it turns off. I'm glad we can
use. Also, one of our points of interest for our improvement our school has been our science department, and we, with this new collaboration, we're looking at textbooks for our science department. And last year we were able to fund some of those for the science department, and this year we'd like to have $5,000 to try to get some more of the seventh grade science books into the science department so the students have books they can take home.
Right now they're only classroom sets.
Yeah.
Correct.
So we're going to try to see how we can do that so we can get the kids to have a book to take home so they can study at home as well. So books are too expensive. Did
but
I say
can
that?
Can you get the same books?
They're $73 each.
But can you get the same books?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're brand new this year.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So $5,000 would not cover that, but with textbook money from the school, we hopefully would be able to cover. We talked with Darren today, just talking a little bit about maybe they team up for the classroom sets, and then each student can have one they keep at home. So I don't know. Anyway, we're looking at how to fund that.
Or even some to check out.
Any online options? I know we had discussed that. Did you discuss that with Darren? Any online?
I did ask Darren about this. The book.
Is it online?
Yeah, he said there were some online resources, not necessarily the book itself, but there were activities and things that were pulled from it.
But usually you have to have this book to refer to.
To use
that has like a little side link thing that it links to and says, okay, you're on this page now. Plug in this code, and then you'll get that. I don't think it will let you do it without the text.
I imagine we're not too far down the road from buying licenses, non-textbooks, to, you know what I mean?
It's been a few years.
We'll log on to a textbook on the web, but not yet.
So the last thing on this is... interrupt. The last thing on here is just My Access subscription for each student in school. And it's held at $7.85 per student for like 2 or 3 years now. So hopefully that will still hold and this would be that price. So that is what we have as kind of just let's look at it and see what we really want to do and what's important and all that. But these are totally connected to the school improvement plan so that it's linked and we're supporting the things that we have felt were most important.
Is this allocation a guarantee? I know it fluctuates every year. Is this the guarantee, the 44 or 5?
I think it'll be a little higher,
so
just slightly higher.
I just knew it wasn't always.
This is what they're saying they know they can do, but who knows? We might.
I've always been told to treat it as one-time money.
Yeah.
We have $3,600 that we have to carry over. That's probably the max we'd ever want to carry over because it's given to the school as a benefit to help education, the greatest need that we have, greatest needs we have to improve academic performance. And that's lowering, you know, struggling kids and advanced kids. That's, and everybody in between. If we had $15,000-$20,000 to carry over, I think our amounts would start dropping because we don't need it. So we want to spend it wisely and effectively and efficiently, so we want to use it for, you know, good benefit programs for students. So, but again, we treat it as one-time money. If it's higher, we would meet again next year or at the end of the year to find out and allocate where that extra money goes. But we always try to spend it and then some. So I'd almost rather have them build the school a little bit and go over and spend every dime than to carry over. I don't want them to ever feel like it's not a value because it's a huge value and benefit of school.
And the way they get that number is the number of students in the school on October 1. And then it's funded however the legislature decides to fund it that year. So it changes. It's gone down years and been higher other years.
But this is our actual amount for this year, right?
This is the amount that they gave me on the website. Well. Mm-hmm. So there you go, that's trust land, and I don't know quite where we are. I know that April 8th is when I turn in the trust land plan, and Scott signs it, and we send it off. So we need to make a decision. I think we meet again in February. So if I can have what we all decide on by then we can have it all ready to go and submit it on time. Because if it's not submitted on time, you don't get any money.
Yeah. And one of the things, well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we had, Mike, Scott, and myself, we already sat down to discuss how we wanted to do this. It was kind of one of those, we wanted to present this today to get everybody's thoughts, feelings on it, rather than taking a vote today. Just kind of take this with you, kind of look it over, digest it a little bit, and then if you have any suggestions, email us. If there's anything else that you want, that you're not seeing here, or any changes that you do that are here that you would like to change, or have any suggestions, that gives you some time to email us, and then we can circulate that around to everybody on the committee so that we can have a discussion at our next meeting. If we need to, the last possible is our March meeting to discuss that and finalize and approve whatever we need to, but we'd like to do that as soon as possible, so that's why we've presented it at this meeting, so you have that.
And the school improvement plan is a vote that we'd have to take and accept, and the trust fund's money is also a plan that we'd have to present and accept or
vote
on. Sorry. Not accept. You
don't have to accept. Okay. So who's funding
E-Time and Learning Month?
That's,
E-Time I can see does need to be super funded because it's just, you know, especially minimal, but Learning Lunch?
Yeah. Learning Lunch, we have a, with our SAC, thank you. We have aides that we've hired to work in the building. They're also our in-house subs. They're also they do everything. They kind of glue us all together. You know, if all this stuff happens. We also have one of those positions is a school-funded, part district-funded tracker that works with attendance, and that person runs our Learning Lunch. She brings those kids in. And we work with her there too.
So it's funded. That's what I was just wondering.
It's not something we'd have to go through trust lines. I mean, we could allocate money for trust lines to do that. But that could be an option, but it's something that we've got in the school currently.
Okay.
Well, one thing I'd like to see is we have lots of options at E-Time and these classes for kids that are failing. But I'd like to see something that was more preparatory type stuff. So I think I'd talk to you about maybe like a speed reading E-Time class, just because I've been looking at some stuff about the ACT, and you have to read at least 250 words per minute or something like that just to get through the test. And I was reading about how speed reading really improves poor outcomes. But it's not something that anyone teaches in the school. So it's usually something parents have to go to an outside source to look at. But I thought that would be something that an advanced kid could take as a way to make them, you know, as an extra. And it also improves reading comprehension, so you're also looking at the fluency and other, you know, academic goals that are improved just through that.
During E-Time,
I don't know, I'm just trying to think of a few more options for kids that do have it all. And true, your kid might not pick it, but maybe if their parents guided them
through
it. Or maybe it could be like a month-long class. Type of thing where, you know, it resets every month or something like that, so kids knew they only had to take it for a month or, I don't know, just something like that.
Good suggestion for E-Time. I think E-Time has moved. Yes, we do, the activities are fun, but we also have, I think we also want that to be an academic time for the students that want to choose that. I was just commenting to Jen, you need to come into E-Time during E-Time and go in the media center. How many students do you get in there? 300?
I'd say about 85,
oh,
90.
85?
Okay. It might be 100, yeah. All
lunch,
all
like
the chairs are taken up and people are sitting all over the floors. But they're all reading.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is you go into the library, 100 students, junior high students. I mean, I was in the car with my daughter and her two friends. That car ride did not end quick enough with how loud it was. But they get 100 students in junior high in a library reading and focus on reading. Amazing. I impressive.
They really do a good job there each time in there, especially because at lunch and at other times the students make them be quiet. And so for them to choose during E time to read quietly, it says a lot about what they are interested in.
Yeah. I think E time funded got a really good evolution. I was in this room when we voted to fund it, what was that, 4 years ago, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
And that E time was a lot of fun. There was a lot of fun activities. And I look at the list, now we come home, and I like the way we focus. You can still go and you can chat, but we don't have manicures going on in hair and chat and nap and... They focused more on the academic edges. Good.
The only thing I could see is the logistic of the thing for E-time is it's really tough. I mean, just I did scrapbooking for a little while. And they're not consistently there, so it would be tough.
I don't know. I just think that they're, I just like to see a few more offerings.
I think if Trust Lands could afford to pay for a teacher to do it after school, as an after school thing.
Even if it were just like a, you know, like a 6 week program or something like that, I think that would really benefit kids that are already doing all the other stuff in school, and I think parents would see it as a real value. Anyway.
Well, and I have an average reader, and I think I could see him saying, oh, that might help me.
Yeah.
Learn some more strategies.
That's exactly
I don't have brilliant readers. You know, I have some brilliant readers too, but I could see the more average ones going, boy, I could do that.
And I think it's so helpful that really speed reading is not really specifically academic, I mean academically focused, because it helps them in everything. When you have chapters of text that you're trying to get through, it really helps to be able to get through it more efficiently. You don't get bogged down as much, you don't forget as much what you're learning. It really does improve all comprehension. So I don't even know. I just think it would be an excellent
option.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even if it were just for the older kids, I don't know. I just think there's something that feels like it's, I don't know, advanced. I don't know.
Kind of a study skills in the sense of, like, my son will come home and he'll be, like, trying to do history or something, trying to hunt for a specific answer to a question. It's like he has to learn the skills of read the heading, read the, you know what I mean? Just some basic hunt and peck skills on how do you find the answer to.
I found my daughter didn't know how to go through a chapter in a textbook, and it's interesting. She's taking the AP Geography class, and I think he's doing a really good job of trying to teach us them, and I don't think they realize they're learning it. You know, learning about how to read through a textbook, you don't read it from beginning to end. You know, you read the beginning, you read the end, you read highlighted sections, you read. So even almost like that, like you're saying, a textbook learning thing that makes it so much easier instead of them looking at 50 pages of textbook text and being like, oh, I can't get through that. Or they read 2 pages and they can't remember what they read 2 pages ago because they haven't done any of that prep work or any of that anyway. But
yeah,
I think it benefits every kid to do that.
And I think something like that, I don't know if the funding is actually necessary for E-time, because
I don't know. Do you guys teach that?
I know in English they do. I teach them whenever they pull out the books. I'm like, okay, where are you going to find all of these answers? Are you going to take the time to read the whole thing? No, you're going to look for the bold printed words. And
I can't imagine kids not being taught that.
They're not, though.
Well,
someone
has
to teach that.
They
need
application.
I wonder if
they're fiction and nonfiction and informative text. So I think you'll see it coming.
Yeah.
Being taught more and more and more as people emphasize information.
Let's see, specific topics like that, as far as funding goes, where it's, I mean, teachers can choose, I mean, ask for different options of during E-time. If we were to say we need one class for a teacher, you know, express that, and if we get 5 students, that's great. We get 5 students that they could teach them basic test-taking skills, how to use a textbook, things like that during E-time. It wouldn't be necessarily an extra prep because there's something they're already doing in their classes, but I think we could do something like that internally anyway, just to advance those things we do during E-time. That wouldn't be necessarily a price on it, but it's something that we can offer, even if it's neat. I mean, I think it would be fun to do that, or, you know, teaching that, depends on what they want to come from. principals are fun.
But you know what, if you ever do that, could you put it on the website that is coming up so us as parents could know and we could encourage our kids?
Or we could send it to email.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. That's yeah. Kind of
because my son
really
would just
yeah.
go to the gym.
So would mine,
saying,
but
could
I would
you
be
please?
Heavy in Sundays at home if he went.
Yeah,
and I
so.
Think kids that go are going to see the value. You know, the first time I sat down was trying to tell my daughter how you read a textbook. She's acting like I have no idea what I'm talking about. But now, 6 months later, when she sees that it's really benefited her, but, you know, kids always believe what a teacher says.
Yeah.
More readily than a parent.
I really like that because it starts, again, it goes into that fourth question of one more thing to do to help students that really want to.
And it helps any kid because anyone that's not doing well, those are often some of the key things that they're missing. Is they're not getting their work done because they're looking at 25 pages of text and they can't fathom getting through it.
I think it's the time that the teachers would like to implement in using the skills, you know, going over this is how you
yeah,
do it, this is how you do it, this is how you do it, and they.
So you know, as adults, we had a huge push ever, and I think it's starting to come back. But I've gotten all my instruction and taught how to teach science. It really is to use the book as little as possible. We really try to keep it in and so I'll tell you right now, my children, my students don't have a ton of textbook exposure. I'll open up the cells and say, "Here's the cells and stuff," but. It's just not where we read and do section reviews anymore. It's just not really like that.
I know. I just think that as they go, I mean, I don't know if high school changed a lot, but I can remember that shift from no textbook to textbook being a primary informational system. And I don't know what point. I think it was until college
but I can
that
definitely
I really
talk
learned
to
how to
at least all the science teachers and say we need to focus and spend like 2 or 3 days at the beginning of each year or something and say. What we need to teach the kids. That's very easy for us to do.
I think that's a lifelong.
And maybe we do it to the history teachers and the English teachers, and we maybe it's just kind of a boring day for the kids. It's not going to be the funnest day in the world. But if they're going from history to science to English and learning these skills in 3 classes within 3 days, I think they'll know it by the time.
At least the concept of it.
Yeah.
Whether they.
Yeah.
You're going to have to practice and apply
yeah.
it.
Every year.
Well, I've just got one of that kind of classes that you know, guy who gives on the ACT.
Yeah.
It's some of those skills are the same ones we're talking about. How do you find, you know, quickly blame information out of things? How do you do this for that anyway? Well, kind of maybe some ideas on subject matter that would be appropriate.
Okay.
Or you know, skills.
Yeah, it's worth continuing to talk about to see what options there are. I know. I mean, I know what's happening in the classes anyway. I know when I was teaching history, that's one of the things we really tried to focus on. Really tried to get them to do because we, yeah, I mean, you need to have to be able to read and understand and comprehend. And
but from a child, primary child, I love the hands-on because he loves science now. He didn't so much before. So I see both sides, and I would rather stay on the pendulum side this side.
No, I
learn textbook later.
I think it's very doable for any department to spend 2 block days on basic text procedures. I think that's very easy.
Well, sometimes it's just mentioning it again.
Yeah.
And remember.
And we
do.
Trust
me,
we mention
know.
It every time. Every time the textbooks are open, we mention it. At least I do, and I can't imagine anybody else not. Because they would be lost without it. They would look at it and just stare at it. And so I always say, because I have some graders, and I always say, okay, bold printed words are where most of your answers are going to come.
So do you expect them, if they had 20 pages a chapter, do you expect them to read every word of that chapter then? Is that what you're saying?
No, but I've never assigned a 20-page.
Okay, I'm just wondering, because we have geography where they'll get 50 pages.
I think it's kind of teacher subject,
the teacher.
For sure.
I'm really sorry, but I kind of need to go.
Yeah.
So is there anything else?
I was actually going to say, because of this, I would move that we take the video and the discussion on professional development, move that to our next meeting.
Second.
Right. It's a video online, because I know 1 year I watched
it online.
Would you like
to check it out to see it? Can't we do that? Do we have to show it all at once?
I just wondered if it was something we could watch ahead,
you know,
and then come
I
and discuss it.
I think the technology is out there. We can either email it to you or make a copy for you.
Well,
see,
I thought we could email it out.
Let's do that.
That'd be great.
We'll get
yeah.
it to you.
Okay. Then all in favor of adjourning?
Aye.
Well, right. Thanks for coming.
Oh, okay. I knew the
thanks, everybody.
Meeting adjourned.
Where's this? You can do that.
MATLAB, can you use...